Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George, and I have a special guest with me today, Dr. David Hogberg from the National Center of Public Policy Research. He's the healthcare analyst, and I talk about Obamacare and the changes that's coming down the pipe, and I talk about it from a medical perspective, from a doctor's perspective, but I thought it really would be interesting and informative to talk about it from a policy perspective, from someone who's looking at D.C., lives in D.C., and is looking at it on a day-to-day basis and seeing what politics is going on and how Congress is moving forward, whether we like it or not, with this disaster they want to call Obamacare. Dr. Hogberg, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? And first of all, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I am a senior fellow for healthcare policy at the National Center for Public Policy Research. One of my main areas of expertise is Medicare. I'm actually working on a book about Medicare right now entitled, with the very academic kind of boring title of Medicare's Victims, How the U.S. Government's Largest Healthcare Program Harms Patients and Impairs Physicians. Before coming here, I was a Washington correspondent for Investors Business Daily, where I covered a number of topics, but including healthcare and Obamacare and so forth. So, I have you call me doctor. It's not an MD. It's a PhD in political science, and I think that covers most of the important bases.
Awesome. One thing I was interested in to know is, how did you come to get interested in healthcare policy? Because it is it's an interesting topic, but not many people really have the chops to go for and actually interest. So what made you first get interested in this?
Well, I've been interested in it probably for the better part of 10 years now, and I kind of hate to admit it, but I guess my interest was a little perverse, kind of like rubbernecking a traffic accident. And by that I mean that, you know, government has made such a mess of the healthcare sector that that's kind of one of the reasons I find it fascinating. Mm-hmm. And, it also gives me a chance to argue that what we need is more freedom in the healthcare sector and a lot less government interference. So that's really what got me interested in it.
Well, I'm thank you for your yeoman work, because I'm reading a lot of your policy pieces, and I think they're right on point. And if you add them to the doctors going through this, if we could get together, it'd be an enlightening journey for anybody who's paying attention to the future of healthcare in this country. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of a loaded question, but what do you think started this ball rolling? I have my own opinion, but I want to know what yours is. Why would the government all of a sudden, unless it's been in place and moving forward and we just didn't know, what made them want to stick their noses into the healthcare field?
Well, I guess the maybe the problem is the premise, part of the premise of your question with all of a sudden. The government, federal government, has been trying this for years. I assume you're old enough to remember, the attempted Clinton overhaul of the healthcare that failed. But you can go back near the end of his term. President Carter was proposing a form of national health insurance. Actually, even under the Nixon administration, there was an attempt to do this. It also failed. Going all the way back to Harry Truman, even he tried. And I think there was even talk when FDR wanted to include it as part of the Social Security legislation, and they decided that that would create way too much opposition, so they jettisoned that and just went with, the Social Security. But the federal government has been at this a long time, and, when they can't get the sort of full-on overhaul like they've gotten with Obamacare, mm-hmm. They grab power in smaller ways, which they've been doing for years, starting all the way back with World War II when they when they used price controls and wage controls, and so employers decided that one way they could attract employees, since they couldn't raise wages to attract better employees and reward good ones is they would offer health insurance as a free benefit, and the IRS at the time, we're assuming we had the IRS at the time, Department of the Treasury, certainly we had, basically said, okay, go ahead. And then Congress formalized it in the 1950s. I mean, that was, you know, the first one where, you know, you created, started to create this sort of two- or three-tier healthcare system where, you know, the best tier is employer-based health insurance, but, you know, people never see the cost of, because it's tax-free, people never see the cost of their health insurance premium. And then, you know, decades later, you got Medicare and Medicaid. You've gotten laws and regulations dealing with, you know, with laboratories and what doctors have to do to set up their laboratories. You've got all sorts of privacy regulations. You've got, trying to think of a couple others. I mean, you know, the FDA, for goodness sake, is another one. I mean, this is, it's just been a, you know, you might say a slow creep where liberty has yielded in the healthcare sector and government has gained ground. Mm-hmm. And so this has been going on a long time, and the political left has just never given up on this. And, you know, they barely got it through this time, but they finally succeeded. And I think people who are in favor of liberty have to kind of take the same attitude. You just can never give up. You know, it took us 40, 50, 60 years to get to this bad point. It's going to take us decades to get back to a freer, you know, a free market, a true free market in healthcare. And, you know, if you're interested in this issue, that's kind of the view I think that you really have to take.
I absolutely agree with that. I mean, you gave an excellent synopsis of the creep, the mission creep on this. But I'm talking from a doctor point of view. I think it's been, we played along with this. And I have to say, for doctors and patients, they played to the worst in both of us. You know, for patients, it was pay as little as you want and get as much as you possibly want. You know, mm-hmm. And for doctors, it was if you don't join a healthcare plan, you won't get patients. And so it was the fear factor on our side. And patients, basically, if you don't have to pay for something, you're just going to go for the gusto. And it was a perfect storm, and I think psychologically perfectly played to get both players in the game. And now we're like rats who can't get out.
Yeah, well, it certainly, I mean, it kind of appealed to the you might say, some of the worst instincts in human nature. On the patient side, you know, the belief that someone else is paying for it, and so, you know, when someone else is paying for it, I use more than I otherwise would, or I'm not discriminating against about price and quality, which I would be if I was paying for it directly. And, you know, that has the effect of not incentivizing healthcare providers to compete, to find ways to bring down cost, you know, on the basis of price, to bring down cost, to improve quality, and so forth, as they do in almost every other sector of our society. On the doctor side, sure. I mean, you know, it sounds like what you're talking about there is that you know, doctors were offered as close to guaranteed income as, mm-hmm. as they could get, and you know, who doesn't want a guaranteed income? I mean, you know, it's not. You know, I can't really condemn anybody for either of those things, but you certainly can condemn government policy for appealing to our worst instincts to get us kind of trapped in this system and to win our votes as well. And but, you know, the ultimate problem of that kind of a system that you're describing is it does very little to reduce costs. In fact, it does everything to inflate them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's when premiums start to rise and costs in Medicare and Medicaid start to go up, the left always uses that as an excuse for, well, government, yeah, you know, we need more government involvement. And unfortunately, the political right has not been as involved in healthcare over the years as the way the political left has. I mean, you know, there's a couple of organizations on the left that fight for more government involvement in healthcare. There's maybe one independent organization that I can think of on the right that does so. But if you look at, let's say, the issue of taxes, we have three or four pretty big organizations that fight exclusively on taxes on the political right. So, you know, that tends to be where we get a lot of our victories. But it's unfortunate that we don't. And I think one of the reasons we don't is for years that, you know, businessmen would say, well, you know, just leave us alone on health care, and, you know, we're fine with the system we've got, and, you know, that was good enough for Republicans, mm-hmm. and there were no major efforts to try to do something that would turn our system into a more free market-based system. That's changing now. I mean, certainly Paul Ryan, Tom Price, I think even most of the leadership in Republican leadership in Congress now gets it that, you know, we need a system that that is more free market based, where consumers make choices as to what health insurance they need, what health care they need, and, you know, providers compete on that basis. But you know, we've got a long way to go before you know, we get to what I think is a much better free market health care system.
Well, you know, I would argue that if you really want free market health care, you have to get rid of insurance companies, and you need to have a doctor-patient relationship directly. Mm-hmm. And the only reason the insurance company should be involved is for catastrophic care,
sure.
Not for day-to-day routine care. That would open up the market, and I think that would reduce prices right off the bat.
Yeah, you know, there was an article on the Huffington Post just like yesterday by an MD by the, I believe her name was Bethany Hayes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, or Haynes, I guess would be how you pronounce that. And the title of it was "No American Has Health Insurance," and I kind of what? And so I started reading it, and she was basically saying, you know, what we don't have, what we have is more or less prepaid health care. You know. Mm-hmm. Going in and getting things that, you know, a doctor's checkup or whatever else that, you know, we should be paying for directly. And that what we really need is a health insurance system that, like you said, just tends to cover the catastrophic. And I would go even further. I think that, you know, with the exception of emergency cases, you know, where obviously, you know, you have a heart attack or you're in a major accident and you're just not going to have time to be worrying about prices.
Mm-hmm.
But in other cases, let's say like a knee or a hip operation, we should have insurance companies, you know, sort of cut us a check, and if the consumer wants to go with the doctor they've got, fine. If they want to shop it around, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it gives the patient who is ultimately the one paying for the cost if the decision goes wrong, you know, with suffering, pain, possibly even death. They should also have control of the resources for paying for health care. I think that would, again, go a long way to improving health care in terms of driving down costs and improving quality. So, you know, it's not just people paying more out of pocket. It's when it comes time for the big ticket items that they are given control over where the funds go, and maybe give them some incentive to say if you know the amount that they pay for the operation comes in under what the check that the insurance company cuts them, you know, they can keep the difference. You know,
exactly.
You know, all sorts of ways to incentivize people to act like consumers.
That's very true. I mean, something, an organization or a company like Aflac would be a perfect example of that,
mm-hmm.
where you know, they pay you on the diagnosis code. They don't
mm-hmm.
ask you, you know, how sick have you been, how many antibiotics you've been on, and, you know, are you blind or deaf yet or half dead before we'll cut you a check.
Mm-hmm.
And you become an adult as opposed to this nanny state, child-based, you're too stupid to run your own life, you know, attitude that the government has, which is a little bit disconcerting.
Yeah, look, and I mean, my fiance got in an auto accident last 4th of July, and her insurance company basically cut her a check, and, you know, then she shopped around for a good body shop, and they took very good care of her. And look, some people just, you know, are not going to want that type of insurance company to do that. That's fine. You know, again, it's about freedom, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, if insurers want to offer people, you know, look, we'll take care of the details for the catastrophic stuff, fine. But, you know, people should also have the option of going with insurance companies that, you know, cut you a check. And, that, like I said, that sort of competition is what's really going to drive down costs. It's going to improve quality, and it's going to make it easier for everyone to afford health care. You know, And that's the way it really works in any market. I mean, look at how expensive automobiles were before Henry Ford figured out how to revolutionize the automobile industry and make it affordable for the middle class and eventually poor people. I mean, look at computers. I remember looking at my first computer when I was 11 years old, and it was going to be like $2,000, and it had, 8 megahertz, which means it, ran as slow as molasses. I mean, and these days you can get them for $500, and they, it's not even really the same computer anymore. Again, that sort of competition is, and the fact that people are paying for it directly is what makes the difference.
I think you hit the nail on the head. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
For years, Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center has been providing outstanding care to patients of all ages. They are dedicated to patient satisfaction and have been the recipient of the Georgia Otolaryngology Association Patient Satisfaction Award. They welcome any questions you may have about their services. Their practice includes treatment of asthma, allergies, sleep apnea, snoring, hearing impairments, and chronic sinus disease. Dr. Elena George is a board-certified ear, nose, and throat surgeon. Her training in New York has included training at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She believes in practicing both the art and science of medicine. All patients are seen by Dr. George. All treatment options are discussed, and time will be spent to answer all questions. Their office is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, you can be confident that you are in good hands with their professional team.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that chronic nasal congestion, a decreased sense of smell, and asthma can be signs of allergies? Allergies are caused when the body is exposed to things you breathe in or eat that the body does not like. The body's immune system reacts and attacks it, what it perceives to be the enemy, even if it causes no harm, like pet dander or dust. This leads to swelling. In the nose, this causes congestion. In the bowel, it causes stomach bloating and diarrhea. In the lung, it causes shortness of breath and wheezing. And in the skin, it causes hives and itching. The first line of defense against allergy is avoidance. Dustproofing, washing pets, and keeping them out of the bedroom can help with environmental causes. For food allergies, keeping a diary of things eaten and reaction to them is helpful. Allergy testing is less time-consuming and is a safe and effective way to identify allergies. For a complete evaluation, you should see your allergy specialist.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George, and my guest today is Dr. David Hogberg of the a senior healthcare policy analyst for the National Center of Public Policy Research. Before the break, we were talking about choice, and I don't care what part of the market we're dealing with, what part of the economy, choice is where is what counts. And I think I know that we're moving towards a time in healthcare in this country where choice is going to be a thing of the past, and it's going to be centralized planning in every aspect of your life, from what sodas you drink, the size of the soft drinks, whether you're allowed to have popcorn anymore, to what procedures get done, what medications you have to take for the diagnosis that you have. If you get admitted to the hospital, you'll be allowed to stay there a certain number of days because the bean counters say that you only need this amount of time carved out for your disease process. And at first it was like the carrot. Now it's the stick. So for doctors on our side, they promised us we'd get money back for putting in electronic medical record systems. And now on the flip side, if you don't put them in, you're going to be dinged with a fine. But once you get them in, you better put in the right information. And that means all sorts of demographic information, not only if the person smokes, but if they have a living will, if they felt like they wanted to hurt themselves, you name it, if they have a gun in their house. And if you don't fill that out, you're not going to get paid. And it's all about compliance and regulations. Do you see that as one of the major players in Obamacare?
Actually, not necessarily in Obamacare. There is a the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Studies are trying to put out a new version of the International Classification of Disease Codes, mm-hmm. ICD-10, mm-hmm. which I think bumps up the number of codes from somewhere in the range of maybe about 18,000 to over 140,000.
Exactly.
And that, that includes things like, it's not just getting bitten by an animal anymore. It's what type of animal bit you. Was it a dog, a cat, a cockatoo, a parrot? Was it some other exotic bird? I mean, they have even codes in there for getting bit by a dolphin. And for the swimmer for the swimmer who didn't take the hint the first time, there's another code for getting bitten by a dolphin a second time. This is going to have a couple of effects. I mean, the obvious one is that it's going to increase the amount of time spent on paperwork versus being spent with patients.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to fall hardest on primary care physicians because all the people I've talked to is that primary care physicians have to deal with a much wider array of codes because, they're usually the first doctor the patient sees. The doctor's trying to figure out from a wider range of ailments what could possibly be, the patient be suffering from, as opposed to a specialist who usually deals with a much narrower range of codes. So, to the extent that we need primary care physicians in medicine, and to the extent that that's a good thing, and I think there's some the research backs that up to a good extent. It's going to drive more people to not go into primary care physician because, the price of their coding or the cost of their coding is going to add greatly to their overhead. And, it makes it harder to make money as a primary care physician. And so you'll see less people going into primary care. And second, probably less people going into medicine or, you'll get the type of people who are completely comfortable dealing with coding at the expense of spending time with patients. Is that the type of people we want going into medicine? That's almost a rhetorical question.
Well, I see it. That's only one aspect of the fallout from this. I think it's going to take a toll on anybody in private practice. Solo practitioner, the small group, and there are going to be more people driven into the hospital setting to become employees because they do have an army of coders who will be able to look through this and fix it as opposed to somebody on their own who has to make payroll.
It also makes it easier for government to control medicine if you can force more people into hospitals. I mean, you're going to have a lot easier control over medicine if you can tell hospitals what to do and then they relay the orders to the physicians, mm-hmm. and so forth versus physicians in their own independent practices who find ways around government regulations if need be and so forth. And I think Obamacare does actually try to drive that with this thing known as the Accountable Care Organizations, where they're trying to incentivize doctors to join accountable care, mm-hmm. organizations. And there's a good paper by Scott Gottlieb of the American Enterprise Institute where he points out that really the people who are going to have the resources to set these things up are the hospitals.
Exactly.
And what does that mean? I mean, you're going to be in an ACO, accountable care organization, is dominated by the hospital. And I think what's really distressing to me about this isn't necessarily that we have accountable care organizations. I mean, fine, there should probably, if it's a model that will work for some people, for some patients, fine. The problem is it seems like Medicare is trying to make this the dominant model of care in Medicare. For most Medicare patients, and you've got almost 50 million Medicare patients. There's going to be a wide array of complexity and diversity in their healthcare needs and preferences, and those things are going to change over time. And I think you're going to need a wide array of healthcare delivery models to meet people's needs. There's research on what happened when Medicare really and Medicaid shifted very heavily to HMOs, and for a lot of patients, it did not turn out well, and not because HMOs are inherently bad. I'm in an HMO. I'm in Kaiser. I like it. It works for me, but HMOs don't work for everyone, and you need different models. You need those models, the people in those models competing for patients, and the good models will, you know, be the ones that remain. The bad ones will either reform or go out of business. But when you have government backing basically one model, one size fits all, that's probably a recipe for bad outcomes, if not just outright disaster.
But you have to remember that Medicare rules health care. So how Medicare goes, so goes private insurances. They set the rate of pay. They set what's covered. They set the time, the DRGs that are supposed to govern how long somebody should be in the hospital and technically to be reimbursable. So you've hit the nail on the head to me. This is all about top-down government control of medicine, and they're doing it in a very insidious manner. The accountable care organizations are examples. I give you the other side. You talked about the policy side of it, but under the medicine side of that, what that means and how they get us is that if the doctor's office becomes a part of the accountable care organization, they now have to follow the algorithms driven by the hospital. Hospital comes up with different treatment paradigms, and you have to follow those. If you don't, you're not going to be reimbursed, and maybe you might even get kicked out of the ACL. And you also have peer review, which is the punitive side of this. You become a problem doctor. You start your peers, by the way, who don't even have to announce themselves, you know, anonymously, can start writing you up. And if that
what happens when some of your patients, though, don't fit the paradigm?
Doesn't matter. But you have to understand, it's not about
it matters. I bet it matters for the patients.
Oh, it does. But this is my whole argument. This whole healthcare debacle is not about patient care. It's about control.
Mm-hmm.
And for those patients who don't fit the cookie cutter, they're going to a hospice, they're going to palliative care, or get over it. That's what they're going to get. And if they do have money, they're opt out.
Hope that you find a doctor with enough guts to say, no, I'm treating the patient here, and I'll take the consequences or whatever, but
Better stay out of the hospital if you want to find a doctor like that. And you better find an office that's not a satellite of a hospital. And that's getting harder and harder to find.
Sure.
It's all about being independent in every aspect of healthcare, as the patient and as the physician. Otherwise, you're in a grid, and it's going to become harder and harder to be an individual and practice individualized medicine. It's one size fits all. It's conveyor belt. And it's about cost. I know, I'm sure you know Dr. Berwick, when he was heading the Medicaid, Medicare services, the big fan of the UK system, you know, their model is a patient is not a patient, it's a cost center.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all about cost effectiveness, not about the individual. So that means, and I remember this, some of the cancer drugs stopped being covered by Medicare because they only saved about maybe 1% per year.
And you mean by the National Health Service?
No, here in the United States, like in New Mexico and Arizona, it was on a state-by-state basis, but they stopped covering certain drugs.
This was Medicaid, right?
No, Medicare.
Okay.
Sorry, I mean, I'm just passionate about it. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't publicized, but it was definitely done, and that was rationing 101. So they stopped covering Avastin, for example, for uterine cancer. Uterine cancer. I think it was for breast cancer only. And so they were deciding based on, we didn't save that many people, so it's not worth covering because it's too expensive. Now, if it were me and it were my loved one, I'd be a little bit pissed, to tell you the truth, that someone's going to decide that I'm not worthy and I'm not worth the cost. And as a doctor, that's my Hippocratic Oath. I'm supposed to do no harm, and someone's telling me, sorry, but you can't be a doctor because what you want to do is too expensive. Does that really make a lot of sense?
If you look at, say, the Independent Payment Advisory Board, which I wrote about recently, and a number of people referred to that as a death panel, and they were routinely, roundly criticized for that. But I don't really necessarily think they were wrong. I mean, you can look at, say, just go across the pond to England with this, their National Health Service has this committee known as the National Institute of Health and Clinical Excellence, which has this kind of creepy acronym NICE.
That's funny.
And what they do is they basically decide whether or not the benefits of a particular treatment or especially drugs are worth the cost. And They have been known to say, no, it's not worth it for various cancer drugs that can extend people's lives for a few months. In fact, there was a report out by a group in Britain called the Rare Cancers Forum a few years ago that basically said that either, NICE decides that, we're not going to use this drug, it basically means that the NHS, the National Health Service, of course, is not going to pay for it. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to stipulate that. And anyways, what the report found was that the number of the denials were and the drugs on which they were still waiting for a decision from NICE had over a number of years probably caused about 20,000 or roughly 20,000 premature deaths. Mm. IPAB here in the States does have power over Part D, the prescription drug benefit, of Medicare. Exactly how they're going to exercise that power, we don't know. I frankly hope they never get the chance, but it could certainly be, Medicare should not pay for this drug because it only extends life for, another 6 months on average, and it's not worth it. Well, should that be a decision made by a committee, or should it be decisions made by an individual? I go for the latter, but, Obamacare is moving us toward the former.
On that note, let's take a break and come back and discuss more about the outfall or the outgrowth of what Obamacare means for us. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know skipping doses of medication can be dangerous? If you have a chronic medical condition like diabetes or high blood pressure, it's important to take the medication prescribed by your physician. It is also important to remember that although you take a medicine to treat a condition, it is not a cure for the underlying medical condition. It is used to control it. For example, taking medication for diabetes will lower your blood sugar. However, if you stop taking the medication, the sugar will rise again. Changes in both diet and lifestyle, like adding exercise to your routine, are equally important. Working with your physician by following his or her recommendations is the key to controlling your disease and maintaining your health. Ask questions if you don't understand something. Taking control of your health is the key to wellness. Please join me Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Moms, dads, listen to my radio program, Homeschooling for Today, on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where you'll learn all about how to homeschool on America's Web Radio.
Have you heard of quantitative fluid analysis? Commonly called QFA, this test assesses your body at a cellular level and gives insight into your illness. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center offers the QFA, an FDA-approved test that can often provide early diagnosis of conditions before they can be detected with other tests. Dr. Elena George believes in an integrative approach to medicine. She believes in treating the problem and not the symptom. Following a review of your results, Dr. George will suggest treatment approaches such as nutritional counseling and or the use of pharmaceutical-grade enzymes and nutritional supplements. Surgery and prescription medication will be recommended only when necessary. Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center is located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest in Suite 260 North Tower, two blocks south of Piedmont Hospital. They are open Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. until 4 p.m. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Call their office at 404-591-9100 to make an appointment and mention that you heard this ad on Radio Sandy Springs and get 10% off of QFA testing.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I'm speaking with Dr. David Hochberg of the National Center for Public Policy Research and the author of a forthcoming book entitled Medicare's Victims, How the U.S. Government's Largest Healthcare System Harms Patients and Impairs Physicians. And we've been speaking about the fallout from this bill and basically all of the pieces that have been placed into this puzzle that is making this thing, this grid is locking in, and we need to be aware of what's going on so that people can start speaking up before it really becomes actually not just the law of the land, but it's implemented completely. Dr. Hochberg, your book that's coming up, I think it's a great title. Because it does both of those things. And we've been speaking just about the Independent Advisory Board and about top-down control of healthcare decisions. And these decisions are now, people need to understand, just because you have health insurance doesn't mean you're going to get healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are least likely to make their own decisions are the people who should be, the doctor and the patient. So give me, I know it's like a huge question, but what do you see as the unintended, I'm going to be nice about it, the unintended consequences of Obamacare for the doctor and the patient? And start off, I mean, you, with your book in mind, because I think people need to get the raw deal here. I mean, the real truth.
Well, the theme that that's going to run through that book, but it's one that can be applied to any sort of government-run healthcare like Obamacare, for the patient means that the treatment you get is going to be less dependent on your need or the resources you have, except for what it is going to be dependent on is how much political clout that you've got. Everyone praises Medicare as a great system. Well, you know, the reason it's a great system is not because it's come up with some magical way to manage medical costs or give out good health care or whatever. It's because, you know, the people who are on it, age 65 to 74, that age group votes at higher rates than almost any other one, with the exception of 55 to 64. So, you know, when Medicare beneficiaries, enough of them are unhappy with something about Medicare, politicians are going to quickly hear about it, and they're going to do something about it because they don't want loads of angry seniors showing up at the ballot box.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with government-run healthcare systems is that the sick, the genuinely really sick, are the usually have the least amount of political clout. For starters, there's usually very few of them. I mean, relative to the entire population, only a small percentage, say, get cancer or serious heart disease or need a hip transplant or a knee transplant every year. And they don't amount to a lot of votes when it comes to election time. That's why you see, for example, in Canada and Britain and other single-payer systems, you see vast waiting lists or waiting times for those types of treatments, for cancer, heart surgery, knee and hip replacements, et cetera. And they've continued for years despite constant, you know, articles about them in the press, and the reason is there's just very few of these people. They don't, their votes don't count for much, and, you know, maybe a not very nice way of putting it is, it, you know, if they're that sick, they may not be around for the next election, to vote. And the other thing is they're too sick to be doing the other sorts of things that endow you with political clout, such as organizing, having a protest, writing letters and emails to your members of Congress, organizing groups to lobby. They've got a million things they have to take care of when they're that ill. And if you're ill with something like Alzheimer's disease, I mean, good luck with, you know, being able to even understand some of this stuff. That's the big problem with any government-run system, I really had to look for it, but I found examples of this in Medicare as well, that the really sick tend to be the ones that suffer the most because they lack any sufficient political clout.
Isn't that the way of the whole country at this point, isn't it? Those who...
Hasn't gotten there yet, but if we can continue down the road of Obamacare and we, you know, look, Obamacare was supposed to save on costs. It's clearly not going to do that. Government is going to have to find some way to get these costs under control, and, you know, government does not actually reduce costs. It simply shifts them, and it's going to shift them on to the sickest because they are the costliest, and they are the ones that have the least amount of political clout, at least in the healthcare realm. And that is eventually where we will be headed, because we've seen that with just about every other country that has massive government involvement in its healthcare system.
I think two things that are coming to light with your statement. You know, there was supposed to be a pool of money that was supposed to be used for people with catastrophic illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And they've closed the system, or they've closed the access to it because it's overwhelmingly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part one. And number two, it turns out that I recently read that the health secretary.
If I could just interrupt for a second, I suspect we'll also find, as things leak out over months and years, that, you know, this was a government-run program, basically, and, you know, we'll find out that they did not manage it particularly well either, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, that's quite all right, but if you can use your example of Social Security, for example, Medicare, that ought to tell people something. And that was one of, just to digress for another second, that was one of the major things that really stuck out to me, that we were going to prepay for Obamacare, put this money in a lockbox, I hate that word at this point, and then it was going to be, you know, used for implementation. It's already bankrupt. There's already taxes that are getting collected. There's already people losing jobs based on what, you know, the fairness aspect of this. As soon as you hear the word, the F word, you need to start running, because when they talk about fairness, it means you're going to pay more and get less. That's what it seems to me at this point. And you were right about those that are in power tend to opt out of the system, a la Congress, who Obamacare doesn't even apply to. And they want to expand that to their minion that work with them. I mean, how does this work? Where, you know, only a few people have to pay for a majority of the country. At some point, the river's going to run dry, I would think.
Well, you would think, but, you know, like I said, you just start finding ways to, you know, shift the costs onto the sickest patients before it really gets to a point that it implodes. That assumes that Obamacare is not going to, you know, collapse of its own weight, which I'm actually increasingly thinking that it just might. You know, when you look at, say, the exchanges, one, there's going to be loads of people facing big premium increases, mm-hmm. even if they get the tax credit to offset some of the cost.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are loads of people who are going to be in those exchanges who are not eligible for the tax credits, and they're going to be seeing big big increases in the cost of their premiums. And then it's not even clear at this point the feds are going to be able to get the exchanges up and running on time. You know, one of the higher-ups in CMS recently kind of let it slip out that, you know, that we just hope this isn't going to be a third-world experience.
It already is.
Yeah, well, you know, and then you've got other problems. I mean, some people are going to be losing their insurance because it doesn't meet the standards of Obamacare, the various requirements of what it has to cover. And then, you know, you have the whole effect that it's going to have on the job market, because, you know, if you're a company with 50 or more full-time employees, full-time being defined as, you know, 30 hours or more per week, you've got to either provide them with insurance or you pay a fine. And so smaller companies are now scrambling to, you know, cut it off at 49 or reduce the hours to under 30. You know, the effect that's going to have on the job market is at least certain sectors of it, I suspect, especially the service sector, is not going to be good. There was a very good article just the other day in the Wall Street Journal by Dan Kessler of the Hoover Institution. It's in its open area. Anyone can view it at the Wall Street Journal. And he basically ran the numbers, and he estimated that somewhere between 30 to 40 million people are going to be injured in some way, based on all the things I just mentioned, by Obamacare. And that's almost, you know, 1 in 10 people, and that's a lot of people.
It is.
You know, an opposition movement can certainly be culled out of that to overturn this thing. And, and I didn't even mention the fact that, you know, Obamacare cuts has been making cuts into Medicare Advantage. People, I suspect, more and more seniors who like their Medicare Advantage are going to be losing it, and they're not going to be happy about that either. So this thing seems to be lining up a lot of people who are going to be very unhappy with it, and at this point I think there's a good chance that this thing will collapse, and that within the next 4 to 5 years you will see most of it repealed.
I would hope that, but I'm a little bit more dubious about that. I mean,
there's a case to be made for that as well.
Well, I would like to see the whole. I would hope that it dies on its own vine, but they've put so many pieces into place now that's changed the course of medicine, that it's irreversibly changed. And until we unless and until we start working towards free market. I mean, Kathleen Sebelius made an argument or a pronouncement that because the exchanges were going to take so long to get going, that they were going to pay for or help patients pay for private insurance. So thereby, the cost has just gone through the roof for the government as well, because they're now not using Medicare or Medicaid. They're using Blue Cross and Humana. And did you see those? Their stock went up on that little announcement. I mean, this is a system that's corporate driven, that the government and corporate America are really coming. They're working hand in hand, and it doesn't serve either the patient or the doctor in this case. And 1 out of 10 is a lot of people injured, and I think that's an underestimate, because those who are still covered will end up getting less coverage for their dollar. Less procedures will be allowed, less office visits, less medications, because you're now putting more people into a pool with a finite amount of money that you're going to have to ration that. Common sense says that even though people are being promised the moon, it's never going to happen.
Well, you know, how many promises did we get that we would see our health care premiums decline? You know,
no.
A family of four would see theirs decline by $2,500.
Yeah.
I've yet to see anywhere that has happened, and in fact, the exact opposite is happening. You know, there is certainly a case to be made that, you know, this is going to be the future for a long time, and that things are going to get a lot worse, and that this thing won't be overturned. I'm not dismissing that case at all. But it has just been surprising to me how, in the last year, how the rollout of this thing has just really is really looking very bad, and I would be very surprised if this is not a major issue in the 2014 and even in the 2016 election. And you know, President Obama said he wanted to be the last president to have to deal with this issue. He's actually going to be one in a long line of many to deal with this issue, because, you know, the problems, if Obamacare, you know, remains, it's, you know, the problems we're going to be dealing with are going to be there for years and years on end, and many presidents are going to have to deal with them.
On that note, let's take a small break and return. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
At Peachtree Ear, Nose, and Throat Center, they provide better quality care. They believe that excellent medical care is a right and not a privilege. They are concerned that the current economy has forced people to sacrifice their health. They have therefore reduced their prices to make it more affordable. They will continue to provide state-of-the-art care. They continue to believe that patient care counts above all else. Peachtree ENT Center, concierge medicine without the concierge price. Additional details are available at www.peachtreeentcenter.com. Call their office at 404-591-9100 to make an appointment or for more information. They are located in Atlanta at 1776 Peachtree Road Northwest, Suite 260 North Tower, 2 blocks south of Piedmont Hospital.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. In the last 10 minutes or so, I wanted to talk further about a little bit about how we educate the population. I mean, there is an article I read yesterday that said 40% of the country doesn't even know that Obamacare is now the law of the land. I don't even know how that's possible, but that's actually frightening. That means you have people sitting on the sideline twiddling their thumbs while this thing is moving forward, and we're trying to warn people there's a train coming, and they're just playing, having a picnic basically on the track. What do you recommend that we do to get this information out there? Because it's key.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, just first start with the understanding that, you know, people have other things in their lives to do than constantly pay attention to policy and decisions being made out of Washington, especially since there are so many of them now.
Mm-hmm.
Look, if a patient is, you know, wondering why you know, they're not getting a treatment or they're not spending time with their doctor, ask the doctor. And if, you know, your doctor, you have to let them know that, you know, this new law is affecting the way that they're able to treat the patient. That's one thing. It's up to organizations like my own and others to get out there and educate the people, every chance we get. That's what we can do. You have to go out and talk to organizations. You have to make sure, for example, that the Tea Parties are informed about this, and they've done some good work on this because they're very good at getting the message out there. And when it comes election time, we're a 501c3 nonprofit, so I got to be careful about making recommendations for elections. I'll just say, people got to go out there and use their common sense on this issue. That's some of the ways that we get the word out. And you need to keep doing this radio show.
Oh, thank you. I'll do my best. I mean, this is, for me, it's like therapy, because I'm seeing this on a day-to-day basis, and I do educate my patients and my colleagues, and it's just relentless. By the time you figure you've got one part of it under control, something else comes up. Mm-hmm. Now, for us, it's now maintenance of certification. That's a new policy that the medical boards have come online with, where if you're board certified, you passed your boards, you have no marks against you, you've never been sued, you're a clean doctor, you're an excellent doctor, they're going to revoke your medical board, your board certification status arbitrarily, unless you take tests that they decide that you have to take. By the way, each one costs about $1,500, maybe $2,000 to take. And that money goes right into the coffers of a private institution, the medical boards. Mm-hmm. So they're working in tandem with the hospitals now, and their hospitals are now putting out the word that if your doctor doesn't have MO, maintenance of certification, then they're not a good doctor. So they're talking now about basically blackballing, blacklisting. It's like a cartel at this point. You play the game. You become board certified, maintenance of certified on a hospital staff, or you're not a good doctor. And they're going to try to make that, at least subjectively, get that into the patient's mind and make them think twice about going to an independent physician.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
complete over the line. Restriction of trade, you name it. And the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons is fighting it, but they're working 24/7. Either they're going to keep the patients on the farm by what insurance they're allowed to have, but in order for the doctors to practice and get their license, because you can't be licensed, so you can't practice in a hospital without being board certified, you better play the game or you won't be a doctor anymore. You'll have to leave the country or do something else. So this is it's malignant, it's growing, and it's silent. And once the system, why I feel that Obamacare has tentacles that won't stop. Because this system is already coming down the road. OBGYN has to do it. I believe urology is the next one on the pipeline. I've seen it listed in ENT, which is what I do. And it's relentless. As soon as you gag the doctor and the patient, whoever holds the pocketbook, purse strings, controls the situation. And increasingly, and you're absolutely right at the beginning of the show, you said the government is creeping towards controlling more of the healthcare dollar, the healthcare choices, then by definition we're moving towards single payer, in my opinion.
Well, certainly there are those who are involved in the Obamacare process that certainly want to move in that direction. No two ways about it. Probably even the president himself, if he wanted to, he had previously said that he supported the single payer idea. And it all seems very nice, pleasing, but at the same time also very deceptive. And single payer is not, like I said, like you've suggested, it leads to rationing. The government shifts the costs onto the sickest patients, and this thing, we need to put a stop to it and start moving back in the direction of free markets, which is the best way to get the treatment that patients need and want at good quality and at the same time be lowering the costs.
Your lips to God's ears on that one, huh?
I hope so.
Well, if people want to reach you, how would they get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. You can just go to www.nationalcenter.org is where I write pretty regularly for a blog, they can certainly feel free to email me at dhoegberg@nationalcenter.org.
And again, Dr. Hoegberg's book that's coming out is entitled Medicare Victims, How the U.S. Government's Largest Healthcare System Harms Patients and Impairs Physicians. And I know it's a loaded question for an author, but when do you foresee the book becoming available?
I'm hoping sometime early next year.
Okay. I'll be the first one to line up to read that. Hopefully we'll be speaking with each other so I can get the inside scoop as it's coming out, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I know it's a big burden of your time, but I learned a ton, and I'm sure my listeners did too. And I hope you'll come back.
I certainly will, and I very much appreciate you having me on.
Have a great day.
You too.